This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
I didn't even mention Mystery Hour. The phone lines are full already, but don't be put off by that. You just be patient. Some people will be politely declined because we've done the question recently, or it's a little bit rubbish. I need to do a little bit of housework as well. A couple of I'm not going to apologise for this. People complaining that I should have done a spoiler alert, never mind a trigger warning, before revealing some elements of how Titus Andronicus ends. Listen, come here a minute. It was written in the 16th century. If you think that I should be protecting you from the conclusion after 500 years, then I'm afraid you've come to the wrong party. I'm also, I've had a few complaints about this gig I'm doing in Glasgow tomorrow night. I never said there were still tickets available, did I? I just said I was going to be in Glasgow on Friday night at the City, I think it's called the City Hall or the Concert Hall. So my apologies to you if you can't get, well, I say my apologies, I'm over the moon that it's sold out. I appreciate that. Obviously it's ruined your weekend. I should perhaps not even have mentioned it, but there we go. And finally, this is brilliant. Thank you to Owen for this. You remember I was saying to Gary, I think it was, that I struggled to remember what order the streets go in Soho. For someone who spent so much time in Soho, in central London, it's ridiculous that I don't. And this is a really good mnemonic that I will probably now remember for the rest of my life. So it is go for dinner with Billy Piper, which means it's Greek Frith Dean, go for dinner. You've written it wrong, Owen, you prune. Go for dinner, Greek Frith Dean, with Wardour, Billy Berwick, Piper Poland. Go for dinner with Billy Piper. That's great. I love that. I love things like that. So I will now, after living in London for the best part of 30 years, I will never now forget what order the streets go in Soho, unless I'm leathered. Alex is in the New Forest to kick off this week's mystery. I haven't done any introduction, described what it is, or even mentioned the board game yet, because we're just tearing up the rule book today. We're just living on the edge. You don't have to be mad to work here, but it helps. Alex, question or answer?
Hello, James. It's a question, please.
Carry on, Alex.
So, why do things stay fresh in a sealed container when the air chemistry is surely the same inside and out? So basically, I'll give you an example. If you've got, you make a cake,
yes.
You leave a slice on the side, it's going to go hard and terrible.
Yes.
If you put it into a little Tupperware box and seal the lid yourself, you're catching the same air as in the box and out, but it'll stay fresh for absolutely ages.
Yeah, so. But you're not, though, are you?
Well, that's what I've called for.
At the moment of closure of box, the air inside the box and the air outside the box is going to be pretty similar. But then the ingredients will start to oxidise, and if it's in a sealed box, they will run out of oxygen, so they will stop oxidising.
Yeah, that does make sense.
It does, doesn't it? I never get chemistry ones right, but I think I've bloody done it. I think I've got one.
I've been trying to call with that question for
about
a year now.
It's a great question. Well, in that case, this is a bit of an anticlimax for you, isn't it?
It is a bit, yeah.
Because if O'Brien can answer it, it probably wasn't that difficult a question in the first place. Is what you're privately thinking. That's what you're diplomatically not saying out loud.
I was hoping it was more complicated, yeah.
But it won't be, will it? It will be that you've run out of oxygen, so the process of rotting or oxidising, or I may have got the technical term wrong, but that is the point. The air is different inside very, very quickly. Because if you sealed if you sealed it in an aircraft hangar, it would probably still rot, wouldn't it? It would still go hard. But if you seal it in a small...
I've tried to picture different size containers too, and I still couldn't get my head around it.
So I know it's an anticlimax, but on the other hand, at least you've got an almost certainly 100% correct definitive answer. Qualifications genius.
Thank you very much. Just one last thing.
Yeah, of course.
Can I please do a shout-out to your biggest fan, Cav, K-A-V, in London? Could you say hello to him?
Of course I can. All right, Cav. But that is the last shout-out ever, all right? That's that last fella of the last taxi driver going around the Wrekin. That is a Shropshire phrase that I did know. I did know the Wrekin. There's a school there that a few of my friends went to, but I didn't know it was a figure of speech to say going around the houses, going around the Wrekin. All right, Cav, mate. You've got a good friend there, Alex, taking that opportunity to smuggle in a shout-out on a radio programme that doesn't do shout-outs. There is a board game? There's even a board game available of Mystery Hour, which I can give away each week. I forgot to do a couple lately, actually. Remind me after the show, Keith, will you? The best contribution of the week wins a board game. We had some crackers recently, so lots of very, very happy customers. Albeit the last two are still checking the post every morning, wondering where it's gone. I'll be sorting that out immediately after the programme today. And it is, of course, something you can also buy yourself at mysteryhour.co.uk or at that website named after a rainforest, or even now in a growing number of shops, including branches of John Lewis. Terms and conditions can be found at lbc.co.uk. Amy is in Bridgewater. Amy, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Amy.
How do they calculate food waste?
How do you mean?
So they, whoever they are, will be on a programme somewhere on the telly and they'll say, we waste 6.4 billion tonnes of food a year.
Right.
How do they calculate it? How do they know what everybody's bought and how much they're throwing away and whether they eat it or not? I can do a shot.
No, I understand the question. I'm trying to answer it. I'm not trying to understand it. I understand. I'm not stupid.
No, of course.
No, thank you. What do you mean, no, of course? That sounded sarcastic.
But they won't know if I buy a bag of apples whether I've eaten them or whether I've thrown them away.
No, and usually you'd think they take a sample and then multiply it to get the bigger population. And all food doesn't end up in the same place, does it? Even in these days of recycling, some people will throw their manky apples in the bin and some people will put it in the food box. So how do they calculate how much is sold?
The compost waste could be...
Yeah, they probably do what I suggested. They probably ask... I don't even know, but it's probably going to involve a survey and then a multiplication to get it up to a bigger population. But then how do they survey? Do they check or do they ask people how much food they throw away? I like that question.
Exactly.
It's a good question. It's one of those questions that gets better with time. How do they calculate food waste? It's one of my middle-aged obsessions. You get obsessed. I'm sure you're not middle-aged yet, but do you get obsessed with this?
I am.
Have you got children?
I'm 2 years off of you.
Oh, are you?
2 years off you. Yeah, I've got children. And food waste is a huge thing for me.
It drives me potty. But I never used to care. Never used to care at all. Suddenly, I don't know why. Yeah. It drives me up the wall. Are you not going to eat that? Why did you cook it? If you're not, why have you done two? If you're only going to eat one and a half, drives me
exactly
unbelievable. I think it's the environment.
I'm not alone.
Well, there's lots of it about. 10 minutes after 12 is the time. Trevor is in Chesterfield. Trevor, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on, Trev.
Why don't tattoos disappear? They just fade.
They do.
And you slough your skin every 4 or 5 times a year, and apparently our skin, we get rid of bodily whatever over 7 years.
Did you just use the word slough?
Slough.
Slough.
Yeah.
Well, that's a wonderful... You don't hear that word out in the wild very often, do you?
Well, I read a lot.
Well, I can tell. That's a wonderful word.
In the wild.
I like a man with a big vocabulary, Trevor.
I'll read Ken Follett, mate.
That'll do. Is there a lot of sloughing in the Ken Follett novel?
Oh, it probably comes from the Viking days, isn't it?
It probably does, actually. I know the answer to this one, actually.
You do?
I do, yeah.
Right.
It goes, you've got layers, so the tattoo is below the skin.
Yeah, I know, but that's what I'm saying. We slough skin and we sweat.
But it's below the skin. The ink is injected below the skin. It's in a different layer of your kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, your flesh.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is that a definitive answer?
Yeah, because we've done it before. I think it's in the board game.
Is it really?
Yes.
Oh, I only listen intermediately at your programme, so, yeah.
That's it. That's your answer. It's not, because you think it's like a felt tip. You think it's like drawing on your skin, in which case it would either fade off or it would disappear when your skin falls off or gets sloughed. But no, it's deeper than that, which is why it will fade. The ink itself will fade. It's not actually that the skin is disappearing or the canvas is deteriorating. Over a really long period of time, the ink itself will fade, but it will still be there.
Yeah, even though we're getting rid of like 4 or 5 layers of skin a year.
Doesn't matter, because it's underneath it.
So it's in what? The epiderm?
Something like, yeah.
Whatever you call it.
Yeah, that one, yeah.
Is it epiderm?
It's the epidermal ocellophilop.
So that's it. I'll give yourself a round of applause. Well,
thank you very much, Trevor. Nice to talk to you.
Cheers.
12 minutes after 12 is the time. 03456060973 is the number you need. Olive is in Epsom. Olive, question or answer?
Hello, James.
Hello, Olive.
Question.
Carry on.
Okay,
yep, in your own time.
Right.
Yep.
What does O stand for and what does K stand for?
O. Okay. Oh, okay, like that. Yeah, right, yeah. Yes. Okay. There's various theories on this.
Really?
And I think my favourite is wrong, actually.
Oh, thank you.
Because I think in Greek you would say... I'm going to get corrected by a Greek now, but I think in Greek you would say "ola kala," which would mean "all good." "Ola kala," "ola kala," all good. But I've got a feeling I've tried this before, and it actually turned out to be wrong. So we shall try and find out for you. It may be one of those ones that's lost in the mists of time, Olive. You know.
But I think everybody just says it. Nobody really knows what it means.
No, it's very true. Well, let's find out. Someone might know the answer to that. But what I'm suggesting is don't get your hopes up, Olive.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's 14 minutes after 12. Okay. I quite like to give Olive the board game so far, but we're only a quarter of the way through Mystery Hour. Ronnie is also in Chesterfield. Do you know Trevor?
No, I don't, and it's Rennie, same as the tablet, James.
Oh, it is, you know, it is, what did I say, Ronnie?
Yeah.
Sorry, Rennie, it does say Rennie on the screen, I guess your brain does funny things, because you don't see a Rennie on the switchboard very, we don't see that many Ronnies, but I presumed you were a Ronnie. I think you and Trevor get on quite well, all told.
Oh, very good.
Carry on, question or answer?
I've got a question for you, James.
Yes.
Have penguins got knees?
Do you want to know the answer to this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because... I've never seen a penguin flex their knees.
No, they do that.
If they have them,
they do quite a rigid walk. They do quite a rigid walk, don't they? Or a waddle as well. I mean, waddle. Yeah.
And when they emerge from the water, they just sort of shoot up with straight legs. So, yeah, have they got knees?
Well, probably not, I would say. Wouldn't you?
Well, then, you know, yes, I would say that they don't have, but if they haven't, then that makes them pretty much unique in the bird world, wouldn't it?
I don't know. Have all birds got knees?
Yeah, but they flex differently to ours, don't they?
They flex backwards sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
All right, you're on. Have penguins got... I had a dream about penguins last night. You've just reminded me. It's the oddest. Genuinely, I can't remember the context or anything else about it, but I definitely had a little dream about penguins last night. Might have been some sort of prediction or premonition. Rennie, not Ronnie, take care. Two calls from Chesterfield today. That's got to be a record.
Hello and welcome. I'm Josh Widdicombe.
And I'm James Acaster. And this is Hypothetical, the podcast.
Where the powers that be have decided that we will be facing the very questions we usually set.
Turning the tables, if you will.
So, if you want to find out how much I need to be paid to be hooked up to a lie detector for a year...
Or how I would steal an animal from London Zoo, then this is your show.
Available now ahead of the new series on Dave.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
It is 12:17, and interrupt Mystery Hour with some important breaking news, which you probably are already aware of, but just in case you're not, the Bank of England has increased base rates to 1%, which I think many experts would probably... Well, Richard Murphy, who we often refer to for... economic advice is suggesting that this means Britain may well be, or the UK may well be, heading for a recession. I'm not going to do any more on that because it's a rise of a quarter of a point, isn't it, from 0.75 to 1%. It means they'll be at their highest level in 13 years, but also I think still at their lowest level in the rest of British history. But I'm giving you the details and I'm giving you the numbers. But I'm frightened of doing it in any further detail because it will get political. And on days like today, we're not allowed to do the policy. So I can do you the report. I give you the numbers, give you the facts. But we'll leave the rest of it until tomorrow. So there it is. 12:18 is the time. Mystery Hour is upon us. Neil is in Bushy. Neil, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Right. We're sending all these arms and munitions out to Ukraine.
Yes.
So we've got factories which must be churning this stuff out. Yeah. Fully staffed. Right, if it wasn't for a crisis like Ukraine, what happens to it all? What do they do with it? Does it just all go into storage and they keep producing it and building it up?
Wouldn't this be true of many things? I was doing GCSE revision last night, and one of the reasons for the economic collapse in America after the First World War was because the boom that came produced all the white goods and washing machines and things like that people were buying for the first time. And then, of course, suddenly everybody had one. So the market got saturated and there was an economic collapse. There was, unemployment rose. And so I presume, and I'm not going to claim a round of applause for this one, but I presume that some of the factories can be retooled and repurposed and they might be doing other things the rest of the time, a bit like we saw with PPE.
They might be, but munitions and armaments and things like that, I mean, I wouldn't have thought they retool rapidly to start.
No, nor would I. No, that's why I'm not even dreaming of a round of applause on this, but the answer can't be that they produce the same amount.
Exactly.
All the time. Or can it? Maybe they're just redirecting it. It's stuff that we would once have sold to Saudi Arabia on the quiet, we're now sending to Ukraine.
Well, that depends upon how much people want to buy it.
Yeah.
I mean, the demand for the stuff presumably doesn't go up or down. I don't know.
I don't know. But, I mean, it's gone up lately, hasn't it?
It's gone up lately because people want it and people
in Ukraine.
They're shipping it abroad. In Ukraine are getting it and they're shipping it out. They're not selling it to Ukraine. But the people working in the factories must still be working at the same rate.
It's a nice question. I mean, it may be one of those ones where the answer is either dull or obvious or both, or it may be that something that hasn't occurred to either of us will pop out.
There's only so many Javelin missiles that you need if you haven't got a crisis. So what have you seen the crates of them on the pallets?
No, I can't understand the question, Neil. I don't need any help in the illustrating of it. You're absolutely right. What happened? So how come all the arms that we're sending to Ukraine in normal times, what would have happened to those weapons? Would they have been made at all? Would they have gone somewhere else? Or would they have ended up in storage? I like that question a lot. Thank you, Neil. 20 minutes after 12 is the time. I'm going to break the habit of a lifetime and I'm going to accept a question. I hope that Karen in Lewis is listening because she sent me this on the 20th of April, which isn't that long ago. I'm going to accept a question by mail, by snail mail. So don't let me forget. I'll get that into the mix shortly. Question still in need of an answer. How do they calculate food waste? I've done that one. What's the origin of OK? I think I've done that one, but not well enough to take a round of applause. Do penguins have knees? And the arms that we're currently sending to Ukraine, what would have happened to them if Ukraine hadn't been invaded? It's a good question, that. Finbar is in Salisbury. Finbar, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, Finbar.
I was going to ring a couple of weeks ago after the Easter break because I couldn't remember what day it was because of all the bank holidays. And then when you came back on Tuesday, you kept on reminding yourself that it's not Monday.
Yeah, it's a radio. It's the curse of the radio presenter, that. Your first day back after a long weekend, your brain tells you it's Monday.
But it affects all of us as well. You know,
of course
I work 7 days a week in the care world.
Well, good for you. Well, thank you.
And sometimes, you forget what day it is, but particularly after bank holidays, it happens. I was wondering, is there a name for that phenomena?
The name...
Like déjà vu.
It's within the déjà vu sort of
world, isn't it?
I quite like. I doubt it. I hope there is. Probably be German, wouldn't it? The Germans would have come up with a word for thinking it's a different day from what it is because you've just had a long weekend. They probably even go that far. Different days and long and weekend and.
So not really a supplementary, but if there isn't, surely there should be.
Yeah, well, that could be. Next time there's an election, we could dedicate an hour to trying to come up with one.
I keep on getting stuck in the déjà vu word, and it's so close to the
not quite déjà vu, is it? Do you ever have a snooze in the afternoon?
Yeah, I do.
If you go into really deep sleep in the afternoon, then when you wake up, you think it's the morning for a couple of minutes, and you sort of run through that quick. Not a panic necessarily, but you sort of run through. What am I doing today? What is it? Hang on a minute. I've already been to what? What's I've already done? What? I had a snooze in the afternoon. I've been having a siesta. Might be a word for that as well. While we're at it. Waking up and thinking it's a different time from what... Anyway, I like that question, Finbar. Thank you for all that you do. 7 days a week, that is a shift, isn't it, in the care sector. 23 after 12 is the time. Stephen is in Leeds. Stephen, question or answer?
Well, it's a good segue into your Deliveroo segment.
Is it? Good man.
We're supposed to have 3 meals a day.
Yes.
And it's classified as 3 square meals a day.
Yes.
Why is it 3 square meals?
It's the Navy. It's the Navy.
Is it?
Square plates on ships because they're made of wood and you wouldn't make them round out of wood because that would be really hard. And 3 square meals a day was an inducement for joining the Navy.
I think you've got yourself another round of applause.
That's getting out of control today, Stephen. It's like the good old days when I used to try and answer every question that came up. I'll take that. Qualifications. I think we've done it before, and it's in the Mystery Hour board game.
Is it?
Yeah, probably. If it isn't, it will be now, because we're doing a supplementary pack in order for people to be able to play even more games after they've exhausted the questions that we've already got there. Thank you, Stephen. Lovely stuff. 24 after 12 is the time. Joanna is in Cardiff. Joanna, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
So it's an answer to the question of how we calculate food waste.
Yes.
So we do it by recruiting a sample of people from across the UK. And we literally ask them to measure and weigh everything they are throwing away, including things like milk that they might tip down the drain or juice that gets thrown away. We collect all of that data. And then, as you said, we multiply that and come up with the terrifying figure, which we then share with people to try and encourage them to stop wasting food.
To stop doing it. Why do you use the we?
We?
Yeah. Is this what you do?
Yes. I work for RAP, which is the Waste and Resources Action Programme.
Gosh.
And within that, I work for Love Food, Hate Waste.
Well, that'll do.
And we work to try to help people.
How big is the sample? I don't want any trade secrets. How big is the sample? No.
I actually don't know the answer to that. I'd imagine it's in the low thousands, but I don't know.
Does it? I suppose it doesn't matter, does it? As long as you've got a representative mix of society and house size and family size and weekly expenditure, then you'd be able to do it.
Indeed.
You're on. Round of applause for Joanna. Lovely stuff. I asked you. You already told us your call. Look,
thank
isn't
you.
It? There you go. I mean, it's just an amazing achievement. 25 minutes after 12. Quick mention to, this is unsigned. I've just Googled the ending of Titus Andronicus. Thank God for Greggs. If you know, you know. All right. Spoiler alert and trigger warning. Jim's in Watford. Jim, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Jim.
It's regarding the question regarding what happens to military weapons.
Yes. Specifically the ones currently on their way to Ukraine.
Yes.
What would have happened to them in the event of Ukraine not being invaded and therefore not needing weapons?
They would have been put into store, and weapons and munitions can be stored for an incredible length of time. A large percentage of it would be taken from store and used in training, both in UK as well as NATO.
Yeah, but so the production levels would be the same at all times, more or less. There'd be the same number of missiles coming out of the production line. I could see it being massively increased at a time of, forgive me for simplicity, of big war. But generally speaking, the levels are going to be the same all the time?
Give or take.
Okay.
There are obviously fluctuations which are based on what's going on within the world and deployments. So deployments for everything from Air Force, Navy, Army can be 12, 18 months, 24 months in advance. So if we're sending out troops to Canada, for instance, for quite a large exercise, which could be a NATO exercise,
yes,
then that will be calculated as to what's going to be needed. You've got training, which means that, UK troops will burn through several thousand rounds of ammunition each person, to keep themselves up to standard. And then on top of that, you've got an element which will weapons can be then reprocessed, which everything from electronics can be checked, things, cordite, if it's well past its sell-by date, then it can be refreshed, then put back into store again.
Yeah, this is all pretty. So there's a variety of answers. In short, then, there isn't currently enough ordnance making its way to Ukraine to render this question as interesting as we initially thought it was. Is that a fair comment?
That's about right, yes. Yeah. Although there's clearly been a ramping up of manufacturing, but even that takes time for it to come through because you actually need to get componentry.
Of course,
and
you do.
There's quite a shortage of, sophisticated weaponry.
Yeah.
Needs a lot of things like chips and guidance, so there's a bit of a shortage of that at the moment. But
that's a lovely answer. Very, very, very detailed. What are your qualifications?
Been in the military for 35 years.
What's it called? Not recruitment, because it's not people. What's the word? But provision?
No. Logistics?
Yeah, that's the one. Is it that kind of thing?
No, everything from infantry through to intelligence.
Fantastic. You're on the right show. Round of applause for Jim.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, mate. I love that answer. I'm going to squeeze in the one that came in by postcard. Do you know why I'm letting Karen in Lewis onto the programme? First of all, it was a very charming card. Secondly, it's a brilliant question. And thirdly, she sent me a pound note by way of a bribe. An actual pound note, which my children had never seen. A pound note. Isn't that mad? I used to get them in birthday cards when I was... I've worked with some young people. They're looking at me quite askance. A pound note. It's like a £5 note, but it's worth £1. Yeah? There used to be a thing. So that was an amazing way to attract my attention. From Karen, whose question is this. Sea otters, not Rayleigh otters, but sea otters, have a pocket in which they keep their favourite stone that they use to open clams. I did not know that. Are there any other animals that have pockets for toys or tools? So not for babies or eggs. So kangaroos, seahorses, penguins and hamsters don't count. But are there any other animals that have pockets for toys or tools? So I write down the question on this occasion. I'm going to write the rather glorious phrase, sea otter pockets. And that is a question that now needs an answer. The time is 12:30. Tim Humphrey is here with your headlines.
With EasyJet Holidays, it's easy to find the perfect package holiday. Perhaps you're looking for a week in the Spanish sun?
Getting warmer.
Somewhere with 5-star resorts?
Getting pretty hot.
With a view of the beach?
You're boiling.
And delicious food?
Found it.
Find your perfect package holiday in Spain. Book now. Search EasyJet Holidays. Atoll protected.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973.
32 minutes after 12 is the time, and here is an unexpected diversion smack in the middle of Mystery Hour.
Woke Watch.
This is an update from the Football Association that has dropped in the last few minutes. Contrary to reports this morning, the FA still plays Three Lions at major Wembley matches and has never had any intention of doing otherwise. The song belongs to the fans and is about the hope of following the England team. It was requested by the FA to be played as one of our team songs at the 2018 World Cup and at the Euros last summer, and this is our plan at tournaments going forwards. So when I included this ludicrous story on the front of the Sun based upon an unattributed quote from one unidentified source and suggested to you that it was all a load of nonsense, it turns out that even by my standards, I was going to be proved right even quicker than usual. Another triumph for
Woke Watch.
Back to Mystery Hour. Tom's in Scunthorpe. Tom, question or answer?
The question, please, James.
Carry on, Tom.
When I back all my data up online, so all my photos, documents are online.
Yeah.
How many places, physical places, is it stored? Because if it's all in, say, one server building and there's a problem, a fire or a flood, have I lost all my data or is it saved somewhere else?
I've never heard of anyone losing their data.
Me neither.
So,
but how many separate places is it technically stored?
Is the cloud... I don't know. I mean, it's amazing how ignorant we are about the stuff we rely
on. It's got to be on the ground somewhere.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? It's amazing how ignorant we are about stuff that we take for granted and deal with every day, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I've got personal documents on there that obviously I don't want to lose and I'm entrusting them in.
No, of course. Of course. So what is the physical repository that the data is stored in? That's what we want to know.
Yeah.
And, I mean, are there backups? Or, yeah, you're on. Okay, I like it. I'm a bit worried now, Tom.
Well, I hope not.
We'll try and find out for you. 0345 6060 973 if you know the answer to that. Thank you. They're called trenchers, those square plates that the sailors use. Corpses reminded me of that. It doesn't detract from the correctness of my answer, but they're not called plates. They're called trench squares, so three square meals. I like that one. Eddie's in Hackney. Eddie, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on.
I'd like to know how the Australian and the New Zealand accents came about in such a short space of time after we colonised them.
You mean how did they diverge?
Yeah.
Or how...
their accents are so unique, and you know, how did it come about?
But isn't it? Don't some people say that if you went back far enough, then that's people were more likely to sound Australian in this country than they would be to sound like they sound now.
I've never heard that.
Have you never heard that? Maybe I just invented it. So what? But what I mean is, what are you asking? How come Australia and New Zealand accents can be different, or how come they don't sound the same as ours? How come the accents exist at all?
Because obviously we were exporting prisoners over there.
Yeah, but which is the question? Is that what you're asking? How come they've got a different accent from us rather than not from each other? Well,
yes.
I actually think I think that is the answer. I think that, what are we talking, 18th century?
something like that, yeah.
I think that I mean, it's a bit like the American accent as well. And Australia and American are probably more similar to each other than they are to London or England. I don't know. I mean, how come Australians have different accents to us, given that they're, I mean, Aborigines notwithstanding, but their English-speaking population has its roots in England. Why don't they sound English? How come they have a different accent? I like that question. I mean, it could apply to America or indeed to New Zealand as well, but it doesn't matter which one you pick. 0345 6060973. I think I've read that if you went back to the 18th century, then your average Londoner might sound Australian, but I could have dreamt that, like the penguins. And speaking of penguins, do they have knees? Steve is in Basildon. Question or answer?
Answer, James. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Hello.
It's a really, really stupid, silly question. And when the question came up, it reminded me of a very, very old joke I heard a long time ago, which prompted me to ask the same question.
Go on.
The answer is, yes, they do.
Oh. Have knees. They do have knees.
They do have knees. However, the femur on a penguin is a very, very short bone, and it's very quite high up on their body.
Oh.
As a result, they can't really flex them. Hence the reason the way they walk.
But why, yes, do they have they it do. At all? Is it an evolutionary glitch?
Well, if you look at most animals out there, mammals, birds, everything, we're all built on the same kind of thing. We have hips, we have knees, we have femurs, radiuses, all those. We have arms, legs. In fact, if you look at a whale, you would say the fingers the same as the fingers on a human. We're all very, very similar. And I got the answer through a veterinarian friend of mine who was specialising in exotic animals. Someone said, penguins walk stupid. Yes, of course they're constipated. I said, no, actually they walk stupid because they can't bend their knees because they're so far up their body because the femur is so short.
Like our appendix, then. They just don't really need it anymore, but it's
still there. It still carries on. But yeah. Absolutely crazy one. Yes, they do.
Qualifications, you asked your mate who's a vet.
Well, I asked a friend who's a vet, but I'm blessed or sometimes cursed with something that's referred to as an eidetic memory.
So you never forget anything?
I very, very rarely forget anything. If I've been told something, I never forget it.
I was about to say I used to be like that, but I was never like that at all. And is it not fading with age a bit?
In fact, it's getting worse or whatever you want to call it. As I say, sometimes it's a curse because you never forget anything and you always win arguments and everyone wins. Yeah, he always wins. I don't argue with him.
Yeah.
So,
that's it.
It's a bit of a curse.
It's like a human Wikipedia. Yeah.
I've been called that in the past as well.
I like it. Well, it's earned you a round of applause, Steve. Long may it continue.
Thank you very much indeed. You take care. Have a great day.
Look after yourself. 12:38 is the time. Sean is in Stone in Staffordshire. Sean, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on, Sean.
To the cloud computing question.
Yes.
So when you store data in the cloud, it actually gets stored in a data centre provided by one of the cloud providers. In that data center, there will be hundreds, if not thousands, of servers, and they will essentially share lots and lots and lots of copies of that data.
Okay.
So if one of those servers falls over, there'll be another one able, you know, the fault tolerance is built in.
What if the whole center goes up in smoke?
Then the data centers are also geographically replicated as well.
Wow.
So it's not just all, yeah.
How big are they? I mean, have you ever been to one?
I won't say who I work for.
You can if you want. Don't worry.
I work for Microsoft.
Oh, okay. So, I've heard of them.
You've heard of them, yeah. and these sites, they're enormous warehouses. I mean, enormous, enormous, enormous. And I was saying to your researcher there, I'm not sure if it's a live one, but we actually certainly did a proof of concept of one under the sea. Off the coast of Scotland.
It's not obvious because it needed to be explained to us, but it's pretty much the only answer that there could have been, isn't it, in a sense?
Yes, I once saw someone at a conference wearing a T-shirt that said, the cloud is just someone else's computer, which I thought summed it up quite nicely.
Yeah. Oof, that made me sort of balk at the scale of the issue, that. And it's only going to get bigger and bigger. Well, I suppose as the technology improves, like chips getting smaller and smaller and being able to do more and more. So we're not going to run out of space, are we? Because we're going to be coming up with ever more novel ways of storing stuff.
Yes, yeah, I would have thought so. So,
what do you do? I'm being nosy now. What do you do for Microsoft?
Oh, I'm not a techie anymore. I'm an account manager.
You know, Bill's in town. Did you see that Bill's in town?
Yeah, he gave me a shout yesterday, but I was busy, unfortunately.
Oh, flipping out. Oh, that'll teach him. Honestly, he should have made sure of your schedule before he got in touch. Have a round of applause.
Thank you very much.
Good man. 12:40 is the time. I saw that my friend Waheed Arian had met up with Bill Gates. I don't know if you listened to Waheed's. It's an incredible story, which is, obviously one can't mention politics at the moment, but... we do talk about refugees a lot, of course, on this programme. Not necessarily from the perspective... No, I can't talk about politics at the moment. And where he did, I mean, literally make his way here from Afghanistan. If you're not familiar with his story, then do buy his book. And if you want to get an introduction to his life story, then do listen to the episode of Full Disclosure that I recorded with him a few months ago. An incredible tale. And I saw that Bill Gates has made contact, that they've met up while Bill Gates has been in London, because presumably because of Waheed's work with remote surgery. He's dedicated to getting medics in this country to kind of help conduct operations in war zones literally with camera phones, so that they can see and advise as if they were looking over the shoulder of the local surgeon. It's an incredible, incredible project. And he's trying to launch something similar to help with mental health issues as well. One of the most inspiring people you could ever meet. And as I say, made his way here from the hellfire of Afghanistan as a young boy. It is 12:41. Richard is in Bexley Heath. Richard, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Richard.
Hello. Just to say, I think Mystery Hour is definitely the highlight of my week.
Glad. Me too, actually, mate. Right, me too. It's all good fun.
Okay, it's a slightly silly question, but here goes. Why does my dog, who supposedly has a highly developed olfactory system, insist on placing his snout adjacent to other dogs' bottoms and various other unsavoury places?
I love the way you wrote that down before you came on, because you've made us sound temporarily like Radio 4. It sounded a bit like Gardener's Question Time then. I love that. Yes, an excellent vocabulary in play as well. Is it that much of a mystery? I mean, just because, it's a signature.
Why does he do it?
But it's the same reason that he smells, that he stops to smell other dogs' wee, isn't it? It's not just wee. It's got some sort of signature on it, and he's...
Yeah, but why does he have to get so up close to it to do it? Or if he's got such a...
I see what you mean. If he's got such a good sense of smell, he should be able to do it from a few yards away.
Yeah,
I hadn't thought of it that way around.
Right next to it,
yeah, all right, you're on. I like that. It's not just your dog, you know. I don't want you to get a complex.
No,
I don't want your dog to get a complex. It's all dogs do this. I love that. Okay, why? Well, yeah, well, I mean, if dogs have got such an amazing sense of smell, why do they have to get so close to the action? 0345 606 0973. Why do Australians not have English accents, given that the population was built upon... The English-speaking population was built upon people deported from England. Done the data storage. Are sea otters the only animals to have pockets in which they keep tools? Is there a word for the... we've done penguins. What's the origin of the phrase OK? And is there a word for not remembering what day it actually is, thinking it's a different day from the day that it actually is? Still got time to go on this. Souk is in Ealing. Souk, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
When you have a picture, right, you know, a couple hundred years old or whatever, and it's black and white, and nowadays people are, you know, adding colour to it, how do they know what colour to add to it?
Well, I mean, it's pretty obvious, isn't it?
How's that?
Well, what colour's the sky?
No, but it's like, say there's a picture of you wearing a jumper, right?
Yeah, I think they take a punt. Well, you're going to have gradations of grey, aren't you? It's not actually black and white. It's many, many different shades of grey, perhaps as many as 50.
Yeah.
That deserved more. And then you'd be able to do some sort of calculation as to what actual primary colour that particular shade of grey denoted, and you'd be able to use that as a rough guide to having a fair crack at what colours are on the photograph. But, you know, no one's claiming that it's going to be absolutely bang on.
Yep.
So if I took a picture of you now... I'd need some sort of key in black and white, and you were wearing a blue jumper and red trousers. Your jumper and trousers are going to look different, even in a black and white picture, aren't they?
Yep.
And then I would work back from that what colours we applied to the picture, with also a little bit of imagination and the knowledge, for example, that the sky is unlikely to be green.
Okay.
Does that answer your question? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it does.
Shall I take it? Do you think I deserve a round of applause, or would you like to hold out for an expert?
I think that deserves a round of applause. Oh, yeah.
Good man. Thanks, Sue. No, so do I.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Qualifications, I've thought about it quite a lot. I'm getting really into that kind of thing. There's a, I stumbled across a local history month, did I tell you yesterday? And a bit of London that I know well, I was reading that the reason why the supermarket car park is on a slope could well be because when the Thames was much wider and shallower, that's where the original foreshore of the bank was. And a Roman road would have been just behind the foreshore, not where the road is now, because where the road is now would have been smack in the middle of the River Thames. And then you come across old photographs. There's a wonderful couple of wonderful Twitter accounts that I follow that just post old photographs of the part of London where I live, and I just love it. I don't know why. It's like an almost a sort of little window on the past. 12:46 is the time, and some of them are posted colourised pictures. 12:46 is the time.
Selling your car doesn't have to mean haggling with strangers or pretending to be a car connoisseur. Simply sell your car the motorway way. It's the new sell your car from home way. All while car dealers compete to give you the best price way. It's the you could get up to £1,000 more way. This is the new way to sell your car. This is the motorway. Sell your car at motorway.co.uk. For price and claim verification, visit motorway.co.uk.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
It is 12:49. I don't think we're ever going to beat that. I'm just trying to work out how long it took for this morning's Woke Watch about the FA to be proved nonsense by the FA. And I reckon that we did it at about 10:50. This nonsense front page story of The Sun quoting one unnamed source as wanting to ban three lines. And the FA released its dismissal of the story at 11:30. We're never going to beat that again, are we? This is like the first day of full Woke Watch with the email address in place, and we've set a record that we're never going to beat. You're never going to have a Woke Watch story confirmed as cobblers in less than 40 minutes or fewer than 40 minutes. It's just never going to happen. Well, at least we've got an email address anyway, wokewatch@lbc.co.uk. It has to be a story. You can't just send me names of people. It has to be a story that we can then take the mickey out of on the show and start the clock to find out when it will actually be debunked by the people actually involved in the story, in this case, the Football Association. I digress. Mark's in Barrow in Furness. Mark, question or answer?
It's an answer, a further answer to your thing about Australian and New Zealand accents.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, well, if you'd never heard of Australia or New Zealand and you heard what someone speaking from there, you'd say somewhere in the southeast of England. It's that type of accent. But more
it's got an estuarine twang, is what you mean. Yeah, all right, I'll give you that.
But more specifically, there are people from Essex who are mistaken for New Zealanders and so forth.
Really?
And when you look at the
even today,
and when you look at the distribution of the population of settlers in Australia, there was a preponderance in the southeast of England that they came from, and more particularly a preponderance from southern East Anglia, Essex and so on.
Criminals.
And the only two exceptions, really, Adelaide, which was all free settlers, no convicts.
Okay.
And they had a slightly posher accent, if you like, and that persists to a degree.
The other exception
is the far south of New Zealand, where there were many Scottish settlers, and they have a somewhat different accent. And what's particularly interesting is that it appears that the accent in Australia and New Zealand was originally more like what we now think of as a New Zealand accent.
Okay.
The Australian accent reverted back towards the British norm, probably because it's a bigger place. It was more in the international run of things. New Zealand was then very isolated, of course.
Yeah, so it would have less of a melting pot.
A melting pot effect. The biggest effect is what's been called the second vowel shift, which is why the New Zealanders in particular have very high front vowels.
Yeah.
And as in tin for ten. And so on.
Yeah, right.
And that's also in Australia, but not so much. It's moved back towards the British norm.
So would it be right then to say that, well, what sort of century are we talking about, Mark, for the original, Captain Cook and then the deportation?
Well, the first fleet was in Sydney in 1780s.
So if you were in 1780s Essex, if you were in Chelmsford in the 1780s, would the accent you hear be closer to a New Zealand accent than a today Essex accent?
It probably would,
right,
particularly more particularly in rural Essex rather than in the towns. But that's the situation.
And that's
it. You can tell an Adelaide person because they have more English sounding vowels, more London sounding vowels.
A bit posher, then, for want of
slightly
a better
posher.
Word. Oh, I love
they
that.
They say path and grass and that.
As opposed to Perth. Path, Perth. Going down to Gordon Perth, Perth, or whatever.
But it's very uniform still across Australia.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Much more than here. Why is that? Just because it's a much newer country?
No, it's a much newer settlement. It hasn't had time to diversify much. But it's beginning. People can say she's not from here. I don't know where she's from, but she's not from here.
They'll be able to pick it up. I love that. Qualifications, Mark? Not for the first time?
Professional linguist, including dialectology.
Look at that. Absolutely fantastic. Round of applause for Mark, please. Have you got the board game?
Yeah.
I've already sent you one, did I?
Yeah, we got one. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. No, that's right, because you nearly got another one then, Mark. It's a good job I checked. Vieri is in Frankfurt. Dr. Dog. Vieri, what would you like? Question or answer?
It's an answer.
Dog's bums. Let me guess. It's dog's bums, isn't it?
Another dog's butt.
Yes, exactly that. Yeah. Carry on.
But the reason that I love this question, because people ask us as well, my dog's nose is so incredibly good. Why does he have to stick his nose in those places?
Neil in Doncaster's dog is often described as trying to wear the cat as a hat.
That's one way of putting it.
Yes.
Yeah, lovely. the reason they do that is because dogs have what's known as the vomeronasal organ. It's an organ in the nose which opens up when they start really sniffing and takes in all the pheromones, which are chemical communicators.
Mm.
So the reason they do that is to take as much of the smell in as possible to really get to know the other dog.
Yeah.
They're
filling their boots. They're filling
their
nostrils.
Right,
they're getting as much of it as they possibly can. So you're bound to go closer. If you're really trying to get it, because I think that the questioner, Richard, is sort of thinking that the smell is actually unpleasant, but obviously for a dog, the smell is the point of the whole process. So you want to get as much of the smell as you can.
Because they can really tell, how the other dog is feeding, what he's had to eat, if he's sick or not, if it's a female, if she's going to be close on heat or not, and so on and so forth.
That's quite a lot to tell.
Yeah, and they might even lick their lips and do that, or lick their noses to make it even more moist.
So sensitive, as it is. Qualifications. Yeah.
I work with dogs. I'm Dr. Dog.
Dr. Dog, with a brilliant website where you can find out more about the work that Vieri does. Absolutely beautiful stuff. Daniel is in Crewe. Question or answer? Have we got any left?
Answer, please, James.
Hang on, I'm just going to cross off dog's bums and accents. Carry on.
It's an answer to the colourising photos question.
Okay.
Just to sort of expand on your answer,
yes.
You are right in saying it is basically guesswork.
Mm.
You know what colour a tree is going to be, what bricks are going to be. So it's just sort of using an educated guess to get that.
And a little bit of different shades, 50 shades of grey, surely. A little bit of, the trousers and the jumper aren't the same. So if you've got,
you've got a rough idea.
So you could take a picture now of different colours and use that as a guide to what the different greys on an old black and white photograph might actually have been denoted, what colours they might actually have been.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Particularly with trees, you can tell the species as well.
Wow.
So you can sort of guess the colour from that.
Yeah, love it. Qualifications?
I'm a director of a small museum based in Cheshire, so this is a subject we come across quite a lot. It's quite controversial as well, whether you should colourise old photos.
I'm cool with it, are you?
I'm in the other camp, I'm afraid.
Are you really? Well, fine.
Yeah, I like them keep them as they were taken.
Well, it's not either or, is it? You can still keep them as the originals, can't you?
Yeah, of course. It's more around how you display them, whether you should display the colourised photo in the museum.
Oh, hang on. No. And in a museum, I want it to look like it looked like when it was taken.
Yeah, I firmly agree with you there.
I'm with you on that. What's the museum? Do you want a free advert? It's entirely up to you. No pressure.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah,
thank you. It's the Crewe Heritage Centre in Cheshire.
Fantastic. A lot of railway history, is there?
Railway and sort of transport in general, yeah. And more of a town focus as well we're pushing towards.
Have you been to the Carpet Museum ever in Kidderminster?
I don't think I have, no.
Right, I'll put you in touch if you want. I'll put you in touch. It might be like a dating service for museums. Daniel, have a round of applause.
Thank you.
I don't know. Wayne's in Molesey. Wayne, question or answer?
Answer, please.
Did anyone hear that noise? Did you hear that noise, Keith? Did you hear that noise, Wayne? Did you hear like a squealing noise coming in?
I did not. It could be the birds from me outside.
Sheila Fogarty.
Oh, no, that's not me. That's definitely not me.
That's unbelievable. That's the door. That needs oiling, doesn't it? I come in and here messing up, trying to mess up my grown-up show. Question or answer? Sorry, Wayne.
Answer.
Carry on.
It's the origin of OK.
Yes.
So back in, I think it was World War II, when the squadrons used to fly back in, people used to say, how the squadron doing? How's everyone doing? They say OK, which stood for zero killed.
Nah.
Definitely.
No chance. All right, now hang on. Qualifications?
Pub quiz.
That's not, no way.
I'm not expecting a round of applause.
You're not getting one because I know that it was around in the early 19th century.
Definitely okay.
It's definitely not. And a pub quiz does not qualify as a qualification. Because if you're running a pub quiz, you're never going to say, oh, I just made that up or I didn't know the answer. Sorry, Wayne, mate. No cigar. Oh, and don't ring me to say what's the origin of the phrase no cigar. Valerie's in Lewisham. Valerie, question or answer?
It's an answer to the same question.
Hang on, further than
the 18th century.
Yes?
In the two parts of France, north is called Languedoc because they use oui for yes.
Oui.
And the south is Languedoc, where they use the word oc for yes.
Okay.
And I was given to understand in a visit there years ago that the oc is the origin of okay.
I think it's ola kala. The Greek for all good is ola kala. Why wouldn't it be that?
Don't know. I'm just telling you what I heard.
When did you hear it? What are your qualifications? Is it you were a French teacher or you were told it by a French teacher?
No, I was a French teacher, but I was on a visit to France at the time.
I think there's going to be claims. I reckon all countries are going to have a claim to have originated okay. I'm not going to feel bad now. I'm feeling stingy, but I'm not giving Valerie a round of applause either because it wouldn't be fair. I'm sticking with the Greek answer, but I'm not giving myself a round of applause either because I don't think there is a definitive answer to this question. Oof, who are we going to give the board game to quickly? Who do we think? I did like Olive. I'm going to give it to Olive. We didn't get her an answer either, did we? No. All right, Olive wins the board game. Can we make sure we get Olive's details and then we'll get it off to her? That's it from me for another day. I'm a little bit late. Here's Sheila Fogarty.
Sorry about that squeaky door.
It was remarkable.
It was
quite
wasn't
the
it?
Noise.
Yeah.
It won't happen again now. We'll call up maintenance and they'll come up with a little
oil can. And
then
everyone will say it was my stomach or something.
It was
just a screechy door hinge, I promise you.